What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dive Bomb Squadcast for episode 73. I'm your host, Matt Judy, and today we have a man who needs no introduction in the waterfowl world, the face of Habitat Flats, and a legend in the blind, Mr. Tony Vandemore. How we doing, man?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate you coming on, and probably a busy time of the year, sneaking by some time to come film a podcast.
Yeah, it gets pretty hectic this time of year, for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. So I really appreciate it. But first and foremost, I kind of just wanted to ask you how you grew up. What was your waterfowl hunting like, you know, before what everybody knows on Habitat Flats and all everything like that? The story, kind of the story going into it.
I was very lucky. Grew up in a little farm town, 700 people. My dad, my uncle, my grandpa, I mean, they took me hunting first time in the blind when I was in diapers.
Dang.
I mean, really, that's all I've ever known. You know, you play football on Friday night or go to the football game, and then you duck and goose hunt Saturday and Sunday morning. We had fantastic goose hunting right where I grew up. Like, man, we were just spoiled. Like, it was this little loafing pond, these old coal mines. And if you put, I can't remember what it was, steel crimps on the decoys, or I'm pretty sure it's probably steel. Anyway. The acidity in the water would eat it away, and decoys would float away in like 2 days.
Jeez.
Nothing growing in it, just straight loafing stuff. And man, we used to absolutely butcher the honkers. It was unreal.
Dang, that sounds like an amazing.
Used to get to Little Richardson's and whatnot in the middle of October. I had a lot of local geese. Duck hunting wasn't very good right there. First year mojos came out. That was kind of wild. Ducks just all of a sudden kind of started coming out of nowhere. But my grandpa had a couple clubs on the Illinois River, and that was super cool. I mean, for beautiful places to kill ducks, you know, hardwood river bottom stuff.
Yeah.
Really cool. So I was really spoiled growing up, for sure. Just, I mean, that's what I did, man. Hunted and fished with my dad and grandpa, uncles, all my buddies back home.
Yeah. And so it was ingrained into your blood from day one.
Yeah, it was, for sure. You know, we knocked on a lot of doors, goose hunted in fields, but we were pretty spoiled on the water side. Great, great goose water setups, and then obviously duck stuff at my grandpa's clubs.
Yeah, no kidding. So growing up like that, having phenomenal waterfowl hunting, you were addicted to it since day one. And then all of a sudden, now you're running Habitat Flats in the face of Habitat Flats. So how did you go from just, you know, hunting with your dad and your grandpa to elevating to this massive business that you guys have built?
Well, man, it all comes back to growing up, man. Like, my grandpa's clubs, it was so cool, man. They had like a horseshoe boat lane, and all the members had their boats there. And you could only hunt till, I think it was noon or maybe one. Come back in, and, you know, they got a hog roasting, or they're grilling burgers, and guys are having beers and telling stories, and just the whole camaraderie of it all was super cool. But the older I got, it seemed like the flyway was shifting west a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
I went to college in Missouri, about an hour from where the lodge is, and public hunting was fantastic. Hunted public every day in college. You know, back then you had to get up. I think the draw was, it's a daily draw, and it was like 2 hours before shooting time. So from where I went to college, it was an hour, a little over drive. I mean, we were leaving college every night at like 1:30, 2 o'clock to make it to the draw. hunt, make it back for baseball practice, maybe study, maybe not, and then get up and do it all again.
Yeah.
Hunting was great. I mean, a ton of birds here in Missouri, and just kind of knew that this is where I wanted to be, and I'd always wanted my own piece of ground just from being at my grandpa's places and all that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. It just kind of all fell into place. Met Aaron and Ira, and they had a farm, and I got a farm down the creek from them. Our partner Dan, he had a bunch of farms around, and we just we're spending a lot of time and resources managing places, and when there's only three or four of you just can't hunt it all. So
true.
We kind of started Habitat Flats as a way to kind of subsidize all the money we were putting into management.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of makes sense too. While you're already doing it anyways, you know, might as well just start using all of that land and everything. Where did the name Habitat Flats come from?
That was that's kind of a mess. So Aaron McCauley and I started the company originally, and we filed the name Havoc Flats.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that sounds kind of cool. Yeah, man. Yeah. We're badass. We're wreaking havoc, and we're cool and all that. Anyway, Ira's buddy, Clay Connor, used to be with DU, and he did the – oh, he was in the stamp print stuff, you know, the paintings and all that stuff. Super talented guy. I shot him over a note and said, hey, Clay, we need a logo. We're starting this deal, Havoc Flats. We need a logo. I don't know, a week went by or something like that. And we get an email back from Clay. And there's this Habitat Flats logo that you see now. Like, yeah, that's pretty cool. But that's not a name. And we called Clay and we're like, dude, what's up with this? This is super cool, but it's Havoc Flats. He's like,
yeah, you're like, it's completely wrong.
Yeah, I must have misunderstood you on the phone or whatever. He said, but think about it. You guys are all about Habitat, and that's what kind of sets you apart. So, yeah, we made it a DBA and rolled with it.
Damn, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So it gave you a completely wrong, like, sketch-up, and you just rolled with it anyways?
Yeah, we're like, yeah, that's got a pretty good ring to it.
I mean, it probably worked out for the better, honestly. It's a sweet logo, and it's a good name.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of differentiate us. I mean, our habitat has always been what we've strived to have the best and always be different with. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Pretty much known for having some of the most premier habitat, you know, in the country. And that's something you just said to keep you different from the rest. I was going to ask you, what early on differentiated you guys from every other business running around trying to do the same thing? Like, what separated you guys from the rest, you think, early on in those early days?
Man, I think there was quite a bit. I mean, for one, you know, we bought all of our ground, which is not easy to do. And we were,
yeah,
I mean, we're still in debt. I mean, never, we won't ever be out of debt. Yeah. But we took a huge risk to do that. And by doing so, you know, it's not like a lease property. You might be able to manipulate a lease and do a few things you want and whatnot. I had some leases, and you know, you could do a little bit, but not much. You had to make the farmer happy, blah, blah, blah. But when you own it, you can really do exactly what you want with it. And, you know, we never took anything out of the business and just left everything in it, just making better habitat. I mean, you know, whatever. I know flooded corn's a big hot topic and all that, but yeah. It's expensive to do. And, you know, that and the millet. And we made sure that every farm we had was the very best it could possibly be from a habitat standpoint. That's what to do if you're leasing something, or even if you're not, man. It's just freaking expensive. I mean, no, don't beat around the bush. It's expensive for sure.
100% it is. Yeah, I could see that owning your own stuff. Literally, you can do whatever you want to it. I mean, if you're leasing something, you might have some stipulations where you can't use water this way or plant something, whatever. You just don't have complete full control over that. So, yeah, I mean, I could see that 100%. How have you guys expanded just a ton since you started?
What was cool is, like, so I had a snow goose business of my own prior to Habitat Flats.
Yeah.
When we started Habitat Flats, we built the lodge to sleep 24 so that we could have four groups of six snow goose hunters. We never wanted to sacrifice quality on the duck side. So when we first started, we were running four groups snow goose hunting, but we were only running like six or eight people duck hunting. We loved it too much. We don't want to just go take you somewhere and it's going to suck. You know what I mean? I don't want to waste your time. I like duck hunting too much. So we'd only run like six or eight duck hunters. And then the next year we might buy a farm or buy a couple farms and add a couple spots. Now we're hunting 12. Now we're hunting 16. And then we got to hunting 24. And then that got, you know, the lodge was full at that point. So we built another building next to the lodge to sleep another eight. We were running 32 every day. It took off a lot faster than we had anticipated.
Than you ever expected.
Yeah.
Dang. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. The duck hunting there. I mean, I saw Asher and Jake and Jordan, they all got to go there. I didn't get the opportunity to come hunt with you guys this year. And they, you know, they did the snow goose thing a couple months ago, and then they got to come hunt ducks and everything. So I was pretty jealous, you know, watching them, and I'm stuck at home, even though our hunting here is really good here at home anyways.
It looks like
one of these days I want to get out there and, you know, hunt with you guys, and hopefully at some point, I don't know. I kind of get stuck to the West Coast out here pretty much most of the time.
Yeah, you got to have some clout. You got to get on about that. Come on out.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, man, come on, let me in on that. So You have a favorite spot to hunt on your place, and you hunt it every day, don't you?
Yep, every day.
Every day. It's a good traffic hole named Love Lake.
It is. It's a pretty cool spot. What's kind of wild is, I'm sure you've seen Bloss on the video, Mark Bloss. Yep. One of my best friends. I hunt with him every day. We leased a spot, I mean, not 300 yards from Love Lake.
Yeah.
And it was decent. We killed some ducks, but you could always see that line back there. I mean, you know, the ducks, when they're on a refuge, they come out and take certain lines when they're going to feed. And running traffic isn't about, you know, obviously being on the X, but it's being under ducks. Yeah. And we're under a few at this spot, but it looked to us like Love was under the majority of them. We could never go back in there and hunt. A friend of mine owned it, and we leased a little part of it. And we'd say, hey, man, hey, Doc, let us go back in there. He's like, nope, I got deer hunters.
Yeah.
Come on. And anyway, we had a small flood one year, and we're like, Boss and I kind of look at each other. We're like, man, there ain't nobody dumb enough to go in a deer blind now. So we went back and we slipped back in there. And of course, it was freaking awesome. We're like, holy crap, man, this is under them all. We got to do something here. And
yeah.
Ended up leasing the deer hunting the next year, yeah. Next couple of years. I don't know how we ever got him talked into selling it to us, but it was pretty cool. Just a great relationship. He was a good friend, and we helped each other out a lot. And very, very fortunate that he decided to sell it to us. It's a pretty cool spot.
Yeah, no kidding. It seems like an absolutely phenomenal spot. And traffic hunting is some of my absolute favorite hunting that I do too. Like I hunt a lot of traffic here. I'll get next to like a big feed in a grass field. I'll just go one grass field over if I can't get on that property. And I'll just go one over or two over and get under them and just traffic the shit out of them. It's some of my favorite hunting because, you know, they're in a place that they're not supposed to be or where they shouldn't be. So I really respect the traffic hunters out there, dude. Like I love all of it.
My favorite way to hunt, when you're putting them somewhere they don't want to be. I mean, I'm not saying you got to be smart, but you got to have good decoys. You got to have a good looking decoy spread. You got to be hidden. And you got to talk to them. I mean, you got to call them in there. I mean, it's just a fun hunt, man. It's lots of calling.
Oh yeah, action packed. And that's just duck hunting in general. I'm a duck hunter. I'm not a goose hunter. I love the fast action of duck hunting and just hollering at them and getting loud. And it's not, you know, a big old honker sliding in for 100 yards. You know, getting ready for it. That just they come out of nowhere. I mean, yeah, I'm a duck hunter through and through. And yeah, traffic hunting, man. I do a lot of it here, so I just love everything about it. You know, I'll throw big spreads with a, you know, but we can only use pull string. We can't use mojos here. We can't use any electronics at all. So we use pull string spinners. I have like four or five of those. Throw out the big rigs on trap. Oh, and you just cannot beat it. And how do you think our new this year is the Dive Bomb partnership. How did you like those floaters running them every day this year?
They were great. They held up great. The honkers looked awesome. I mean, even though it's a little timber hole, we use 5 dozen honkers just for visibility and kind of stops them from going up to the top. And ducks always feel safe around geese. It's just something different that other people aren't doing. And then we put in 8 dozen of the fully flocked mallards, and they look.
Yep. And do you pull them out every day or do you leave them in there?
We do. We pick them up every day. Okay. Even though it's traffic, we could probably get away with leaving them out. Man, I just think that you get them killed and they're not looking at it all the time. I think you can get away with a lot less decoys. Maybe around 13 dozen, which is not a lot. It beats sitting over 500 or 600 that sit there every day.
Yeah, that's true. I'd feel the same. I'd probably do the exact same thing and pull them every day and re-put them out.
You know, the wind shifts a little bit the next day or 180 degrees different, whatever. I mean, it's nice to be able to fine-tune it every morning when we set it up.
Yeah, true. What does a typical day in the life of Tony look like for you just like mid-season getting after it?
Man, I'm not going to lie. It's awesome. I love duck season. It's my vacation. The off-season's work and duck season is duck season is what I work all year for. You know, I wake up early. I'm not much of a sleeper, so I'm usually up between 2 and 4.
Yeah.
Drink coffee in my office, get the emails done, and get the dogs aired and then go to the lodge, have breakfast and talk with everybody, and then head out and smash them, hopefully.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome in-season schedule. I'm kind of the same way. I usually only hunt more so weekends because all my buddies are working all week. I'll go out and solo hunt a little bit with my dog, but I mean, I'd put on a absolute shitload of miles here just for, like, you know, fun hunting out here, man. And it's something I enjoy. It's kind of a, like you said, a vacation for me, because, you know, in the off season, I'm just always like, man, I'm freaking bored. I need something to do. And then from October to February, there's always something to do, always some ducks to look at, ducks to find. And yeah, it does feel like a vacation to me. I'm like, yeah, it's go time now. But do you have a favorite, like, part of the season, or is it just all kind of the same, like early, mid, or late season?
Man, I kind of like it all. I mean, I like it when the leaves are still on the trees. I gotta say that, I mean, just like, I like shooting other ducks, I like gadwalls and everything else, but yeah, it's hard for me to beat a big bunch of mallards coming in an ice hole in December.
Yeah,
you got the well that coming up in front of the blind and a couple ice eaters out there, and man, especially when it's cold, you know, gets down below 20, they don't move very good in the morning, but sun gets up midday, they start to come out to eat, and I mean,
yeah, game on. So you're a pure mallard guy. That's your favorite.
It's my favorite. I'm certainly not a purist.
But you'd say a mallard probably your favorite duck, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to shoot one duck on my deathbed, it'd be a greenhead, but I don't know, man. I love widgeons. Pintails, like, whatever, I care less. But widgeons usually give you a pretty fair shake.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah, they do. That's about all I hunt out here is just massive widgeon wads, and they like to decoy really well all the time. But I'm the same way. Pintails, those don't do it for me at all. Those can just, I don't even care about them, really. Probably widgeon, mallard, and then, I don't even know, I kind of like sea duck hunting out here, too, a little bit, just for fun.
I like teal. I like green wings. I love blue wings in September.
Yeah. That's one thing I wish we had over here. We don't see, I mean, we have a lot of green wings, but we don't get like the early season blue wings like that come down in September. We get like 5 days for a honker season in September, and that's about all we get. But I got to go down to Louisiana this year and shoot a blue wing and hunt teal in the freaking 90% humidity.
Yeah.
Just hotter than hell. And yeah, I was like, yeah, I think I don't know if I need to do that again, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah, a ton of mosquitoes. It's hot.
Just
kick off to our season here because we can't. Well, it's the first waterfowl we can shoot. We've got a little local Canada goose season, but it's not till early October. So,
geez, yeah, that's late.
I usually stay here for teal season, hunt 16 days, which is only 9 this year, but and then I'll head up to Saskatchewan Lodge after that.
Yeah. And that's some of my favorite hunting. All September, we usually travel around all over Canada and hunt whatever we can find. And that's what I look forward to, too, most of the time is September and going and shooting ducks up in Canada. There's nothing like it to me. I think we have good hunting here. And then I go up there and I'm like, holy cow, dude. It makes our hunting at home just look like shit.
So much fun up there. You know, you're a dog guy now. I mean, you can make a dog one trip.
Yeah.
I mean, the best way to make gun dogs, kill a bunch of stuff over them. And, you know, with the liberal limits up there, your dog's going to pick up a pile of them in 10 days, 2 weeks.
Exactly. If you go on like a 10 or a 12 day, even like a 2 week trip, you're going to be shooting a lot, like putting a lot of birds on the ground. And that's like phenomenal for making a dog. Like you said, just those reps and everything, just there's so much killing that goes up there. It's crazy. And that's another thing I wanted to get into. So you have Habitat Flat Kennels now. When did that start? That's pretty recent, isn't it?
Yeah, I want to say, what's this, 2025? I think it opened in March of 21.
Yeah,
our head trainer, Eric Thiessen, man, he is a badass. Dude's so good. Probably one of the top hunt test guys in the country, I'd say.
Yeah.
Phenomenal trainer. But it's a beautiful facility. All the water and tech ponds and all the different setups and whatnot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of a natural progression. I mean, we've all had awesome gun dogs, and the dog is as much a part of the hunt as anything.
Yeah.
It's just a good progression for us, natural progression, and building great gun dogs. We're about as passionate about that as we are duck hunting.
Yeah, that's freaking badass to see. Because I followed Habitat Flat Kennels now because, well, I mean, I own a dog kennel, but it's not a training. It's just a boarding kennel. Dogs were like never a part of my life until like 3 years ago. I didn't have dogs growing up. I didn't feel the need for a gun dog or anything. Then my wife gets a golden retriever and I'm like, oh shit, I kind of like this thing. And then that is the dog that made me like dogs. And then now I got my first gun dog this year. And I'm like, oh, dude, I got to take back everything I ever said about a gun dog, man. Like, I have to. Like, I'm about to have to go make a public announcement and take back every word I said because I'm like, dude, I don't know if I could hunt without this dude now. It's crazy.
It just brings such another level to the hunt. I mean, when you got them set up on hand signals and all that and watching them chase down cripples, just look at how many footsteps they save you, man. It's awesome to watch.
It's ridiculous. And I figured that out this year and I'm like, my dog Drifter's out chasing a honker 200 yards away and I'm like, holy shit, I didn't even have to go attempt to grab that.
Yeah,
he just brings it right back to me.
Yeah, it's
so I learned cool. my dog taught me a lot this year, just solo, because we had a pretty down year this year, so I just solo hunted with my first year gun dog and just kind of tried to figure him out. And then he taught me a lot too. And I was like, he taught me, you know, how to handle him. I'm sure every dog's different on all sorts of handling. And I was just getting his reps in. I think his light bulb clicked, I think, in his third hunt that I took him on. I could finally see, like, he put everything together. And then after that, he was just like phenomenal after that. So I'm looking forward to, you know, the next year's coming with my own dog.
It's so cool. Like, I remember my old dog, Ruff. He picked up, my God, 25,000 some birds.
Holy shit.
But when his first year, took him early honker hunting. I mean, we trained and did all that stuff. And, you know, he picked a few up and blah, blah, blah. But we went up to North Dakota. My buddy Clint Roby and I, we always used to go up there. And the first afternoon, he was in a ground blind. And we were out in the dry field. Dogs, they're looking around. They're licking their tail or whatever. I mean, they're puppies, you know, they're a year old.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it, man. It was like mid-afternoon, just got set up, and all of a sudden you look up, and here comes a flock kind of over the top. Dude, he was sitting in his dog blind, and he looked up, and from then on, it was just like he was locked on. Like, his ears were always perked, always looking. Before that, you know, they're looking low, like looking for marks and But that was when the light switch flipped, and dude, it's so cool to watch.
Yeah, you could just see it in him. Like, I remember when Drifter's light switch flipped, there was just like he watched me shoot a solo widge come down. I could just see it like in his eyes. It looked different as he marked it, and I was like, oh yeah, he's on this now. And I, like, same thing with him. He'll be looking up and scanning around and watching everything come in. So it was pretty impressive to see.
You don't ever have to worry about them being late or not showing up.
Exactly.
All the time.
I got a lot of complaints about my freaking buddies being late in the mornings, and, you know, a dog will always be there for you pretty much. Yeah, so that's good. Habitat Flats Kennels has been going good. Is that just every day, year round
type of thing? Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of it's gun dog training. We do hunt tests and field trials, all that jazz. So a lot of the dogs end up going home November, December. Guys want to hunt them.
Yeah.
But yeah, this time of year is full bore.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think there's 80. Yeah, there's 80 kennels there.
Holy
Yeah, there's four trainers, bunch of staff. It's cool. Like, the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Super Retriever series.
Not really, no.
It's like the Olympics for dog tests. They come and have a big event at our place every summer. That's really cool to watch. It's just cool to see, man, especially, you know, dive bomb's been a big part of it. You go out there and all the different ponds had decoys on them. I mean, silhouettes, full bodies around them, socks. I mean, it is true gun dog training. Like, they're going to be in boats. They're going to be in pits. They're going to be on stands. They're going to be in blinds. They're going to be on ramps. I mean, anything you can think of to build a gun dog, they got to go.
any kind of scenario. Yeah, that's freaking sick. That'll build an absolutely well-rounded gun dog.
Yeah,
for sure, when you can put them in every scenario, even before they get picked up to go on their actual real first hunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's freaking sweet, man. That's cool to see the success of that. And I was kind of curious about it just because I'm just in the dog game now, but just boarding them. Luckily, I don't think I have the patience to train dogs.
It takes a special person to be a dog trainer. I mean, they love those animals.
Like, yeah.
I mean, he's there every day training dogs all day. And I'm the same way. I did the finish work on my first dog, and my dog since then, I've had him trained. I mean, life's gotten busier. I mean, kids, mm-hmm. farming, and blah blah blah. But I like dog training, but I don't know if I like it enough to go do it 10 hours a day every day.
Yeah. 65 days a year. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely respect. I respect every dog trainer that does that, because I saw how much work went into it, even in my own dog, because I would go there, you know, I went and saw him a few times, and I saw what that trainer did, and I was like, oh my gosh, dude. Yeah. I saw the puppy that I gave him that was just a psycho, and saw what came out of that, and I was like, I don't know how you did that, but that's impressive.
That's
pretty
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So now we're sitting in like the thick of the off season, and I'm sure you're farming and planting. And what's that looking like for you nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing a lot of burning off wetland units, getting them ready to go for summer plantings and whatnot. But right now, getting ready to start sticking corn in the ground. It was plenty dry. It got really dry after snow goose season.
Yeah.
But it stayed kind of cool. Soil temperatures weren't there to get anything in, and I had a pretty good window last week to start planting, but it was looking like we were going to get a bunch of rain, and dude, I've planted so many times in April and had it washed out or not come up.
Yeah.
I decided not to do it, and well, luckily we had 2 to 4 inches on Sunday. So.
Jeez. Yeah.
But it's starting to dry up, so I'm hoping by the end of the weekend I'll be ready to start rolling some corn in the ground.
Yeah, that'd be good. Start getting planted. I mean, even here, just for our local dairy farms, they started planting this week, and that's pretty early for us. Usually we're about like mid-May. And so you plant corn and what else?
Corn,
millet, beans. All that stuff? Yep.
Corn, beans, millet, like buckwheat a lot. You know, we manage our moist soil for good natural stuff, and the barnyard grass, the smart weed, panicum, that sort of thing, nuts edge.
But
then we'll go in and we'll plant some Jap millet to supplement in certain areas, especially for teal season. But, you know, it's a ton of work in the off season, just a ton of work. Long days, hot, sweaty, all that. But, man, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love the management part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a part of the entire year round of, you know, killing a duck, basically. Yeah. You put in the hard work in the off season, and then you reap the benefits from November to February, pretty much.
It's super, super rewarding. We kill plenty of ducks for sure.
Yeah. But
it's a very, very small percentage of the ducks that we feed and help on their way down south. It's just super, super rewarding.
Yeah, I could see that, you know, when you're like driving your side by side on the levee going down, you see all the ducks, you know. I kind of saw that with my own eyes at Cody's place at the 203 when I saw just all the ducks in there, and I was like, oh my gosh, dude, this is badass. Like, and then Cody was the same way, you know, he's put in all the hard work in the off season. He was sitting there on his dock just looking at them, and he was like, man, this feels good. And I was like, yeah, it's got to after you work your ass off, you know, all spring and summer, and then the migration finally comes and everything works out. You know, that's got to feel damn good.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there looking at everything.
I love watching them. I mean, hell, I like going up in the afternoons just watching them come in the roost and fly around, you know, splash around the water feeding.
But yeah.
Listening to them talk to each other and how they interact. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you have any good tips for somebody, you know, looking into either building a property or management from year to year, things to look out for, just any general good tips for habitat management?
I mean, to me, ducks' nutritional needs change throughout the year based on the weather, the temperature, all that. And flooded corn, sure, it's good. It's got its times. But to have and hold ducks for 60 days, you need to have variety. We have way more moist soil than we do corn, honestly, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Even like on the moist soil stuff, when I was younger, I wanted to work every bit of it and plant jack millet or buckwheat. I wanted to make sure, you know, hey, I'm putting the effort in. I'm doing the whole damn thing. Well, so you plant it and then you get a July flood or early August flood. And that stuff you planted, I mean, it ends up just looking like a moonscape. Whereas your natural foods, don't discount them at all. I mean, I do a lot more natural anymore than anything, because that stuff's like survival of the fittest. It's been genetically altered for millions of years.
Yeah.
Catch a late summer flood and your jack millet and stuff might die, but a lot of times your natural stuff is going to come through it. So you still end up having good, and ducks have been eating that stuff for ever since there's been ducks.
Yeah.
I think that's my biggest tip. Don't feel like you got to overthink it and do too much.
Yeah. And just overplant everything. Yeah. Leave a little bit of natural in there.
And the natural stuff's nice because you can manipulate it. Like where I want to brush hog and show water, you know, especially shallow stuff. You can have all the food in the world, but if they can't see water, they're probably not stopping. And most of our ducks migrate at night anymore. So I'll basically just leave the natural stuff in, you know, the shallow water, brush hog it all down. All your food's still there. And then they can see that ripple of water at night. And once they stop, they're not leaving.
Yeah. No, that's actually, I didn't even think about that, honestly.
Yeah. I don't want to think about what the footprint of the farm looks like from the air. Especially at night, because that's when they're coming.
Like, yeah, when they're moving in. But yeah.
When I was a kid, you used to see the grand migration. I mean, I can remember countless days where you look up and it's just V after V after V after V. Ducks, geese, I mean, everything. Yep. Anymore, it's like you're sitting there and, man, it should be a flight day. 25 mile an hour northwest, blizzard in North Dakota. Sitting there looking like, where the hell are they at? And then about 1 o'clock. Boom, they start moving, but they're coming off the refuge.
They already came in, rested
for half a day, and then out they come.
Damn. Yeah, I guess that would be a pretty significant change. I mean, even here, too, the only thing I really notice migrating in here now is the snows. Other than that, it's just like a night and day. Like, one day I'll be scouting, there won't be that much, and then the next 2 days, they'll just be freaking, there'll be ducks everywhere. I'm like, oh, shit, they rolled in last night, I guess.
That's my take on it.
Yeah. Yeah, have your farming practices changed at all since like the beginning until now?
Man, not really, other than we got a lot more to do.
Yeah, a lot more busy.
Yeah, definitely a lot busier, but it's pretty well stayed the same. I mean, I always try to do different things, like on the moist soil side or even on the corn side. Hey, I want to try to plant a little bit here to block them from going right up against this, or kind of keep this hole. I mean, always trying to better the mousetrap some, for sure.
Hell yeah. You sneak any fishing in the off season, or are you too busy for that?
Yeah, I actually love to fish, but I don't get to do it a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
A few farm ponds around here, got some big bass in them.
Yeah, some good bass fishing.
Yeah, spend some time Lake of the Ozarks in the summer, and like to get down there bass fishing.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like to bass fish a lot. It's like, I mean, we have world-class salmon and halibut and lingcod all in the ocean, world-class river fishing. But bass fishing to me is one of my just like favorite things, you know, to just get my mind off. Duck season, I always look forward to it. About like the end of January, I'm like, damn, I could go for sitting on a bass boat right now. So like I just went out last night. We didn't catch shit, but it's still nice to get out on the boat, catch some bass, hang out with the buddies, drink a few beers. Like, that's one of my favorite things that I look forward to in my off season is bass fishing from like May to June. And just keeps my mind off everything, which is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love to fish. Grew up fishing. Used to go to Canada for almost 2 weeks every year. My dad and uncle, smallmouth fishing. Smallmouth's probably my favorite fish. We don't have much of it around here. But, you know, now just being able to go out, you know, like Lake of the Ozarks or wherever and go bass fish with my dad, man, it's still just as fun as when we did it when I was a kid.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
now I realize that having him in the front of the boat is probably not the best thing, because he's like a damn vacuum up there. Damn it. I get substantially less bites when he's in the front of the boat.
Yeah, exactly. That's why on my boat, I always try to be at the very damn front running the trolling motor, because I want first shot at everything up there.
Yeah. I think the days where hey, this is a good dock coming up here. Flip right up there to that corner. Those days were over about 20 years ago. Now it's like, oh, hey, get the net. I'm like, God damn it.
Hell yeah. That's what happens when you get older, I guess. One thing I wanted to ask you about, too, is you have two daughters, right?
Yeah.
What's that like? Because I'm curious because I have a baby girl coming in like 3 weeks now. It's like she could be having a baby at any day pretty much. And, you know, it kind of keeps me up at night wondering how I'm going to raise, you know, a daughter in the outdoors world or the outdoors community. And even if they'll even like it or not, you know, it's kind of something I've been following with you for a while. And it's just got me curious because how is it raising daughters in the outdoor space?
Man, it's freaking awesome, honestly. After the first one, Vivian, once she was born, I wanted the second one to be a girl. I always thought I wanted a boy, but after having one girl, I was like, man, I want all girls.
Really?
They're badass, man. They're so sweet, but it's so much fun to take them out. They're on the tractor with me. They're in the Rangers.
Yeah. Planting
corn. We're duck hunting, turkey hunting, deer hunting, you name it. I mean, it's just like, anything else. I mean, just introducing it right. It's got to be in really, really short spurts. Their attention spans are small. But let them help with decoys, take snacks. I mean, really, it's not about the hunt. It's just about making sure they want to go again. And,
yeah.
You know, I started, they were little. I think Vivian was probably, hell, I don't know, 3 when she started going with me a fair bit. Yeah.
That's young.
It was nice because my wife could bring her down for a couple hours and pick her up or whatever. But it's cool, man. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Actually, my 6-year-old, well, she's 7 today. Today's her birthday.
Yeah.
She shot her first turkey 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, man. It was badass.
I mean, that's got to be something cool to see, seeing your own daughter shoot, you know, first anything, first duck, first turkey, deer, whatever. Was she over the moon about it, pretty hyped?
Oh my God, it was – thank God he was deaf and half blind, or we wouldn't have had a prayer. I had both of them. I had Vivian and Victoria. Vivian's 10, Victoria's 6. And yeah. We're all 3 in the blind. And Viv's got her gun. Victoria's got her gun. And buddies are texting me like, you hearing any? I'm like, dude, I can't hear a damn thing except kids talking. Never heard anything. Finally, I don't know, 8:15, I heard one gobble. I'm like, okay. And then he gobbled about 8:30, a little closer. And then here they come. And Vivian, man, I'm super proud of her. She's 10, and you know, when I was 10, I wanted to kill everything.
Yeah.
And she's like, nope, I'm not shooting until Victoria does. I'm like, oh, my God. Okay.
Damn.
And anyway, he comes up there, jumps on the decoy, and I told her, you know, make sure his head's up, aim right below the red, right there.
Yeah.
You know, right in the middle of the neck, and jumps on the decoy, just beating it to death. Vivian's bared down. Victoria's on it, and she's kind of going around like this. I mean, she's 6, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I'm like, Vic, shoot. I can't shoot. And she turns. She's like, God, I'm shaking. It's not because I'm cold. I'm like, oh, boy. There we go. It was super cool. Luckily, he stayed on the decoy for over 2 minutes. And finally, I'm like, Victoria, shoot this thing. Like, both trigger. And she shoots and lays him over. And, I mean, we're freaking celebrating. She's going crazy. I said, Vic, what? It took you a little while, honey. Were you scared or what? She's like, well, no, Dad. You told me to wait for his head. He never took his head up. He's in strut on top of
it. It was just strutting.
I was about to have a come apart. I mean, I'm just like, oh, my God. Are we going to, like, please shoot this thing? Well, she was dead right. I mean, she was just waiting. But
damn. She was, hey, she listened to what you said.
About gave me a heart attack, but.
No kidding. Yeah, that's, I'm looking forward, you know, to those days. Hopefully I can steer my daughter into, you know, being a badass widgeon hunter, waterfowl hunter, something like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, she could do, you know, whatever she wants to do. But I hope she would want to enjoy the outdoors with me, whether it's on a bass boat or trout fishing or, yeah, you know, catching crab in the ocean, something like that.
And I think, I'm scared of the teen years a little bit, but I think that having that good foundation, something that they're, if they leave it for a little bit, are going to come back to it.
Yeah. You know, just trying to make it, you know, probably a part of their lives from since day one. It's just like a part of it. They can drift away and come back or whatever. I'm just, it's got me kind of, it keeps me up at night thinking about it every now and then.
Man, I used to deer hunt a lot 20 years ago and bow hunt and all that jazz. And I haven't deer hunted forever. And Vivian was, I don't know, seven or eight or whatever. She's like, Dad, I'm going to go deer hunting. She heard about it at school. I'm like, okay.
All right.
Okay, we'll go deer hunting. And she shot a doe the first night. I'm like, holy crap, okay. Well, it was one of those deals. She loved it. So, you know, the last 2 years, she's killed big bucks. And I don't deer hunt anymore, but sitting there with her and spending that time, I mean, dude, it's fun, man. I really enjoy it now. And watching her shoot a big deer is like the best thing I can see happen.
Yeah, like you don't even want to kill one yourself. Just watching her do it, you know, makes the whole experience.
Yeah, when your daughter gets old enough to start traveling, man, that's when it gets super cool.
Like, yeah.
You know, they stay at home and they run around and blah, blah, blah. But like Vivian, when she was 8, I took her and she ended up getting her single season Grand Slam for turkey.
Damn.
And it was just so much fun. She was old enough, I mean, riding around in the car all day, scouting.
Yeah.
Eating Dairy Queen, staying in a hotel, whatever, knocking on doors. And I can tell you this, you don't get told no very often when an 8-year-old girl's knocking on your door.
I can see that in mind.
Whether it's turkeys or deer or ducks or anything. I mean, you have a sweet little 8-year-old girl come up and say, oh, sir, I saw something in your back field. Yeah. You want to see if we can hunt? Oh, sweetie, you bet. Come on.
Yeah, that's a good weapon to have in your pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's cool, man. I wouldn't have it any other way now that I've had girls. I haven't missed out one bit by not having.
Yeah, you don't feel like you've missed anything, you know, not having a son or anything like that.
No, and honestly, I mean, you're probably the same way. I don't know. When I thought about having a son, I'm not saying that it sounds super, super conceited, and it's not me, but you know, I used to play baseball, I used to do this and that and the other, have Habitat flats. And I just think that there's the weight of the world on their shoulders. I mean, how many times do you see dads and sons? And I mean, what first thing you ask your buddy's son that you played baseball with, hey, how's baseball going? Well, you want to say he struck out 3 times or didn't even want to play? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Different expectation level. And I think I'd
be a lot harder
on boys personally.
No, I 100% agree with that. If you were to have a boy, because you know how you grew up or I grew up, you kind of want them to be similar, and it could just, you know, not happen, I guess.
Yeah. I think honestly having 2 girls has made me a better father.
Yeah, that's what a couple of my other buddies who have had a girl or two said the same thing. And I'm from a family of women. I have 3 older sisters, and I'm the only boy, and I'm the youngest. So I'm used to being, you know, I've had girls in my life, my whole damn life. So I was not surprised literally at all. I was like, oh, yeah, no, I saw that one coming from a mile away. But seeing you and, you know, enjoy the outdoors with your daughters kind of gets me hyped, you know, to do it also myself. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to enjoy the newborn stage, and that's, she's due May 15th, but she could come at any moment. So that's a huge life change for me coming up. I think it'll be good.
Don't take it for granted. Those stages, they seem like they last forever. And, you know, they don't sleep well or this, that, or the other. But, man, it goes by in a heartbeat. They're just sitting there. They can't do anything except cry and make somebody change their diaper. You're like, come on, talk. Like, talk. Yeah. Talk. Go do something. I mean, you blink your eye and all of a sudden you can't catch them and you can't get them shut up. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It goes from 0 to 90 mph just like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and how's the pageant stuff? Vivian's the one who does that, right?
It's man, she's actually she's freaking good at it. She won the Miss Missouri deal and then won the national title and then doing all this modeling stuff. She's been in New York City Fashion Week a few times, Kansas City several times, like Austin, Denver, Paris, France. Paris, France last year, so going back this year. But I got to tell you, I went to my first fashion show. It's Kansas City Fashion Week here, I don't know, a month and a half, right after snow goose season. I'm sitting there, whatever. I don't really know anything's going on. And I know they're walking down the runway and they're doing this and doing that. Dude, she come out of there and she looked like freaking badass. I was like, whoa.
You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was completely like nothing I've ever done. But, man, I couldn't have been more proud. I mean, I don't care if she was walking down the runway or dunking a basketball or shooting a mallard. It was
anything.
Man, I was pumped up.
Yeah, that's good.
Succeed no matter what they're doing and be supportive of anything they want to do and just watch them succeed. Fills your heart in a way that you don't even know is possible yet.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I'm really looking forward to, you know, that next chapter of my life, and hopefully it don't slow me down duck hunting too much. I don't think it will, because that's just ingrained in my blood and I don't think it'll ever change like that. But good to hear some dad advice from some dudes who have done it before.
Yeah. You'll be great. You'll have a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so you're just off season grinding, man. You're about to go hop on a tractor after this or what?
Yeah, I was actually. It needs to dry up just a little bit.
Yeah.
We got everything ready. All the grounds work. Just need a couple more dry days.
Just a little bit drier weather and then it's freaking go time.
Yep. Trying to kill a turkey and enjoy some of that this time of year. Love turkey hunting.
Yeah. I was going to go try and kill a turkey. I have to travel about like 4 to 6 hours away to even kill a turkey here.
Yeah, you're wrong.
So it's kind of a mob. And she was like, that is way too close to our, you ain't going nowhere. I was like, all right, fine. Me and Asher usually go on a little turkey trip here. We did it 2 years in a row. It's always pretty fun hunting turkeys with him and running around, scouting, knocking on doors. Yeah. I'm not too much of a turkey hunter, but I like to do it. You know, it's something to do for me to try to, you know, get out of here and go shoot a gobbler. It's pretty entertaining. I only started turkey hunting like 3 years ago, just simply because we don't have them directly in our area. I can't just go drive 20 minutes and find a turkey, but it was pretty fun for me to, you know, get into it. But I think next year I'll try to be back at it.
I love it. I like hunting here. I really like traveling. I love Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming. I like hunting Merriam's. Fun to hunt.
Yeah. That's what we hunt here is Merriam's up in the hill country, like in the pine trees and the mountains.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive when I witnessed it for my first time and shot my first gobbler out there. I was like, oh my gosh, dude. This is, I see why people like this. This is pretty badass.
Yeah. Merriam's will come from a long, long ways away.
Yeah. And then I shot a Eastern in North Carolina, but those Easterns just gobble harder than hell, dude. They're just like, they just hammer.
Yeah,
compared to the Merriam's, I was like, gosh, dang. Yeah, so hopefully I can get back on my turkey hunting next year. I had to chalk it up to a zero this year, so I'm just bass fishing, you know, local lakes, trying to kill some time. And fun enough for me, I got old shitty bass boat that I take out that I rebuilt, and I fish the same fish every day and take the same loop on the same lake, but it never gets old to me. Yeah, so it's been cool to see, you know, the progression of Habitat Flats and the legend status of you just growing and killing the hell out of ducks and seeing good management, adding the kennels on top of it and hearing about the off-season grind that a lot of people really don't think about. They see just killing ducks in the winter, but they don't see, you know, what goes into it in the off season. So it's cool to hear some background stories on that and just see everything be successful for you, man. We're really happy to have you on the Dive Bomb side. It's been awesome. Hopefully I can get out there. I'm gonna try to get Asher to send me on a trip to your place this year. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Tony. Appreciate it.